Hello?
Hi, my name is Ryan Gurnett. I'm with the Struggle is Real podcast. I was checking out your band, and I'd love to promote your music and play on the podcast.
Actually, I handed over all the songs to our label now that we're putting out a full length. I don't have the originals anymore. Sorry.
How is it possible to hand over originals of MP3s? How do you not have any copies of your own music? Do you know how MP3s work?
Do you know how MP3s work?
From Buffalo, New York, where the venerable Father Baker was born, lived a life of peace, nourished the poor, and then became the stuff of children's nightmares. It's the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Welcome to the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the ups, downs,
banana peels, stars, and the dreaded blue shell
of the Buffalo music scene. I'm Ryan Gurnett, and I'm not worried because I'm never in first place.
And I'm Nate Nuorta. Joe Kent, the shell's coming for you.
On today's episode, we sit down with local guitarist Dan Behrens, otherwise known as Danimal Cannon. Danimal's interview was so interesting that we're giving him two episodes. We're going to talk to him about everything from chiptune music, video game composition, using Game Boys as synthesizers, playing in Japan, and everything else. So I'm really excited for both these episodes. He was definitely one of the most interesting guests we've had up to this point.
We're also going to play a game of Real Not Real with musical video game facts, cover previous and upcoming concerts, and more.
I feel like shit today. I'm exhausted.
Why is that?
I was out partying last night.
Oh, boy.
We had our second infringement fundraiser at Milky's. And
on Elmwood?
On Elmwood.
In the city?
In the city. Not the Milky's in, I don't know.
Indiana.
Who played there?
So, Carrie Faye played first.
Fantastic.
I love Carrie Faye. I think that was probably the best performance I've heard of her so far.
Just yeah.
That voice is everything she does, the songwriting, the voice, the guitar. So it was awesome to see her. We had Jackie Z, who is a local, more of a performance artist. She came on stage and did some clowning.
Okay.
And you know what? Not exactly my cup of tea, but you know what? Like, you pop your head in the room, everyone's having fun.
Yeah.
And she is a ball of like positive vibes and energy, and I can completely get into
right.
that.
And it's very much in the spirit of Infringement Festival.
Absolutely.
Right?
So, and then like Bloodthirsty Vegans went on after that. They only play a few shows a year. I was so happy that they came, and like the second they started, it was just like a party burst out. Like that whole big room, like it was packed, and everyone's dancing. And then that led right into Chucky Campbell, who does the exact same thing. He's fantastic. He raps, and they have a backing track, but he still performed with a drummer and then two horn players. So on each side of it, like one side there was a trumpet player, one side there was a trombone player. I think they both did a little bit of vocals too, and super fun, energetic set. I caught the first few songs of Days Ago, who we've talked about on this podcast before. I love TJ. I don't know how to say his last name. The singer. I love his voice. It's just got this like rich tone, the Bradley Nowell from Sublime kind of sound that it's hard to find people who can really get that right. And they sounded great. I've only heard a few of their songs, so hearing some new stuff was cool. And then I cut out. I didn't get to bed till 2. And Toy Box Brigade went after that. And DJ Soyotos played after that. So it was. It was fantastic. I've never seen Milky's rock like that. It's cool to see.
Yeah.
And then even talking to some people, they said, you know, it doesn't get this full often. So it was great to see that. And like I said, the lineup, I was really happy with the way it went. So we had that going on. And that same time, Mr. Will Webb was doing something. Will, where were you?
Oh, I was at the Ninth Ward in Babeville, basement of Babeville.
Mm, very cool venue.
Yes. Very cool venue. As usual, we had a great lineup. The Shallows went on first. They are a pretty dreamy indie kind of pop rock band. They've got a girl named Emily who plays cello.
Always room for cello.
Always room for cello. And then the lead singer, actually, he kind of reminded me a little bit of like a Glenn Hansard kind of voice. But more in the Frames. Okay. Not so much him as a solo, but more in the Frames.
Explain who Glenn Hansard is for our listeners.
Well, Glenn Hansard used
aware.
To be in a band called the Frames through the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. And then he kind of broke off as a solo artist from there. And he's probably most well known for doing the music and the score for a film called Once.
An excellent movie.
And I think most people probably know the song Falling Slowly, probably more than anything else. But the lead singer kind of had that feel to him. And then my band, The Leones, got up after that. And we played a decent set with some new songs from our upcoming EP that we're going to be recording this spring. We also played two covers. We played a War on Drugs song off their new album called Knocked Down. And we also played the theme song for Twin Peaks.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you tell me you recorded that?
Oh, yeah, we've got it. I'll show you.
Yeah.
But, we had a good time. And then First Ward closed the show. And I think the thing, you know, I like about them and just all the guys last night, everyone is just so friendly and nice.
Absolutely.
And cordial and just, hey, how are you? I'm so-and-so from this band or whatever the case is. Everyone watched each other's set. The place was definitely packed for a smaller venue like that. I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing between 80 and 90. And people just really liked it. And it was an early show. I was
sure
out and at Dinosaur Barbecue by about 11:15.
Barbecue so, sounds great right
now. I was very
right
hungry
now.
After the show. I sat in the back and I drank too many beers, and I was just like, I need to get some food before I drive home. So
sure.
Dinosaur Barbecue was right there, so we went there and had a kind of a subpar burger, actually. I should have known better. You don't get a burger from
Barbecue.
I just felt like something quick because they were closing at midnight. So.
No, yeah, you gotta get barbecue.
Yeah, that's what I should have gotten, but I was kind of worried that they wouldn't have it in time, but... yeah, great show.
Yeah, Zach Ward is an incredible guy. He does a lot of really awesome stuff.
And it was just, I mean, the songs are just so catchy, so fun. The crowd was just, it was each band complimented the next.
I always thought First Ward reminded me of The Refreshments. What do you think of that comparison?
The Refreshments, like Friends theme song?
No. No, that's the Rembrandts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Refreshments were Bandidos. So how far down do you
right.
Do you remember them at all?
Yes, I do. Now you say that. Yeah, they did that Jean-Luc Picard thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I can see that.
Okay.
I can see that.
All right, cool.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we are going to play some Chucky Campbell. So we'll be listening to Language of the Unheard right here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
How many senseless acts of violence do we value human life?
Trayvon Martin,
Terrence Crutcher,
Eric Garner,
Terry Price,
Michael Brown,
Sandra Bland,
Freddie Gray,
Philip White,
Walter Scott,
Jason Molin,
Dante Clark,
Tamir Rice.
Yeah.
Learning how to smile again without storms of sunshine. Another routine traffic stop, another broken headlight. Another unarmed victim, cell phone video and headline. Another case where all lives matter except black lives. Watched and blamed the victim before his heart can even flatline. Demonize the subject and report on black on black crime. Ignore the key eyewitnesses, his hand was by his waistline. The assailant was resisting, check his rap sheet in the meantime. Put that officer on paid leave and family on dateline. Mock their tears and feelings as millions watch them in real time. Never mind the patterns, check your makeup, yo, we live, right? Cue the lights, arrange the sound, stage is set, prime time. Hands behind. on your head, lay you flat down on the ground. It's a flashlight to the face, run those plates, they out of town. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some riot. Hands behind your head, lay you flat down on the ground. It's a flashlight to the face, run those plates, they out of town. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some riot.
Another black male in a jail cell for a crack cell. We don't never tell, we don't never speak, but we always yell. When the hood life, man, it's always hell. When the trap house, he can tell the smell. When the courtroom, he ain't getting bail. Bought the wild, he ain't getting mail. Single black mom, she don't need a mail. Hands up, mean don't shoot. Selling dope, boy, no excuse. If you rap, you ain't dropping facts. That ain't no excuse, you a prostitute. Black man gotta rise up. Doze off, open eyes up. Unified, gotta grind up for your time up. Walking in the street, God is with me. Cause I know the devil always trying to get me. I won't fall if I do, they might kick me. I break the chains cause you know I gotta get free.
Hands behind your head, lay you flat down on the ground. It's a flashlight to the face, run those plates, they out of town. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some
riot.
This description, hide your hoodies and your skittles. There's no danger like the fear behind the man who holds a pistol. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some
riot.
Hands behind your head, lay you flat down on the ground. It's a flashlight to the face, run those plates, they out of town. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some
riot.
Profile fits description, hide your hoodies and your skittles. There's no danger like the fear behind the man who holds a pistol. It's the language of the unheard, language of the unheard. For years we couldn't make you listen, now we on some
riot.
Welcome back to the Struggler's Real Buffalo Music Podcast. We are joined by Dan Behrens, also known as Danimal Cannon by Night, a chiptune musician, a video game and movie composer, and lots of other stuff that we'll be getting into. So, thanks for being here, Dan.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So, let's start at the beginning. When you were growing up, what gripped you more? Was it music or was it video games?
Oh, it was definitely video games.
Okay.
But music was also huge. It's really hard to, like, say which one was more, but I spent a lot of time just taking in both of them. Like, I have memories of probably playing in my basement any particular game far longer than I should until like 1 in the morning, and then also just being in bed with a tape recorder or tape player and just listening to albums like on repeat.
Sure. What kind of albums were you listening to at the time?
So my sister is a bit older than I am.
Okay.
So she, at some point when I was a kid, she decided I was cool enough. She gave me any tapes that I wanted because she was switching over to CDs. She gave me the Metallica's Black Album. She gave me Aerosmith's Greatest Hits. Oh. The first four Led Zeppelin albums.
Ooh.
Some Rush stuff. I think kind of the gist of it. There was some
sure.
Genesis stuff in there. And Pink Floyd's The Wall. I used to listen to The Wall.
So, growing up and playing video games, what did you start with? What was your first system?
So, pretty much what happened to me is I got a Nintendo Entertainment System.
Nice.
That was my thing. I remember one Christmas I got like 7 games for it, and it was like the best thing ever. We used to go to the flea market, the Super Flea over in Walden, and got a ton of games cheap there. So I amassed a pretty big collection of games. And then at some point my dad won a Game Boy in a contest.
Nice.
So I would take that on little road trips and played the heck out of that. And then what happened is my parents told me that, you know, I was going to grow out of video games, and they never got me any system after that. So I never had anything other than a Nintendo until I had a DS that I bought with my own money, or a 3DS. And then my first console that I had since the Nintendo was a PS4.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
wow.
I played Nintendo. I was still in high school playing Nintendo. I was still in college playing Nintendo. I was still playing old Nintendo games up until, well, today. Wow. I still am.
I know you are a platinum ranked Rocket League player.
I'm higher than that. I'm champion ranked.
God damn.
Yeah, I've been moving up.
Jeez. What are your favorite video games to play?
So,
what do you like playing?
You did mention Rocket League.
Yep.
I play way too much Rocket League.
Rocket League's a lot of fun.
It's amazing. I'm a big Dragon Quest fan and Final Fantasy fan.
Sure.
I got into Japanese RPGs on the Nintendo.
So, at what point did you kind of start combining video games with music? How does that come to you?
So, I've always enjoyed the music in games because they're really good, for one reason. Back in 2002 or 3, I was playing in a band in Buffalo. We were called My Lost Lenore, and then we changed our name to Terraform later.
Oh, okay.
And I was always trying to convince my bandmates. I was like, oh, there's this cool Nintendo song. We should learn how to play that. And they were all kind of like, yeah, whatever, Dan. That's like kind of a dumb idea. But I ran into some communities on the internet that were into, you know, remaking old Nintendo songs into, you know, modern sorts of band arrangements, and I was like, oh, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I was already a big Nintendo music nerd, and so then I just went super deep down the rabbit hole of, like, in order to learn how to cover the songs, you have to download the technology or the programs to, like, dissect the individual channels from the source files, and you really learn about the hardware and, like, what they were capable, and you end up doing, like, archaeology of, like, oh, certain companies had this technology available to them. Because they were essentially creating their own tools to write music.
Sure.
So Capcom's music is going to sound different than Sunsoft's music. Hmm. And so is Konami, you know, from any of the other stuff. And they'll all have their own samples or even the capability to use samples, depending on the programs that they wrote in-house to write the music. And a lot of that stuff has been lost to time, but people have been able to sort of reverse engineer, you know, what people have been doing, or talk to old composers and ask them about, you know, what they've been doing. And so I'm a big nerd, and I study that stuff a bit. And
you started off with the Zeppelin records and the Pink Floyd. Do you find that, like, are there elements within, like, I guess prog rock would probably be the closest, that you find kind of translate well into what the chiptune stuff is? Because, like, when I listen to chiptune and then hear it, like, Bit Brigade sounds like prog rock.
Right.
And I think if you take the chiptune music, because I think as it is, that's kind of the best way to do it.
Right.
So are there similarities in, like, the scales or the how the rhythms change between the two?
So that's, like, a really good question, and it's hard to have, like, a one-size-fits-all answer.
Oh, sure, sure.
But the reason that Nintendo music, when translated, you know, sounds a bit like prog rock is because the Nintendo, what it could do musically was very, very limited. You had these, you could only have three notes playing at a time on these monophonic channels, and it, not to get too nerdy and too into it, the way around it, the thing you could do is be really complex compositionally. And so you could have a lot of notes, and that's easy to do. Computers are really good at playing notes really fast. And then they also, a bit more of a classical influence in that, like, a lot of the composers sort of had studied classical music, so there's a bit more counterpoint and, you know, two melodies going on at once, like, more complex harmonically than a lot of rock music. But because you can only have three instruments playing at once, and sometimes you had some drums too, they kind of had this combination of, like, either classical type harmonies, maybe not classical is hard to say, but prog rock type harmonies,
sure, yeah,
in a rock context when you sort of translate them to what a regular instrument would do, because heavy composition is what the Nintendo did best, and a lot of the people who were composing were using a more interesting sort of melodic techniques than a lot of rock musicians are.
Oh, absolutely.
I like to say that it's very melody-centric.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I like to describe whenever I am covering Nintendo music that, like, oh, I'm playing a 40-minute long guitar solo. Because that's essentially what it is. It's a very structured, complex lead that, you know, is up in those ranges that, you know, is not happening except in sort of, you know, jazz or orchestral music, but playing with a loud electric guitar and things like that. There's very few times where just people are strumming chords.
Yeah.
That's not really something that happens in Nintendo music. It's a lot of, it's a flurry of notes.
Yeah.
Often, and that tends to be something you find in prog rock music.
Sure. And I find what makes it so impressive to me watching it is just they're making music on instruments that it's not intended to be played on. And
right.
I think that's where a lot of the challenge lies.
Oh, there's a huge challenge there. Sometimes you play things that are literally impossible, and then you have to try to find workarounds that are as close as you can get.
Yeah.
So I do have a story from this weekend. So the beginning of the Woodman song in Mega Man 2 has this big...
Oh, that's a great song.
...chromatic beginning that goes... like 32 notes of just going down. And they asked the composer, like, what, you know, how should we play this? Do you want us to, you know, try to play every single note super fast on the guitar? You know, we can do it as best as we can, you know, try to really sound out every note. Or do you want us to just do a slide down the neck? And he said, piku scrapu. And he wanted the pick slide, you know, and they asked him, you know, what do you think would be the best translation? You know, what should we do?
I want to call my punk band Piku Scrapu.
I did that.
That's cool.
And forgive my terrible impression of what a Japanese person speaking in English might sound like, but...
Yeah. That's as inoffensive as I think we could have done.
So. Yeah.
So who are your guitar influences?
So there's a guitar player named Guthrie Govan, who I think is the best guitar player in the world.
Okay.
Like... And that's my opinion, but I wouldn't be so wrong to objectively say it's true. Like, his ability and expressiveness, I have not seen been matched by anybody.
Sure.
And he can do so many different styles. I love him. He's amazing. I'm a big old Metallica fan. I don't think there's anybody in this world who can compare to James Hetfield's picking hand. Like, that man is literally just a machine, and I'm jealous. I want to, like, cut it off and graft it onto my arm, because, you know, when I try to pick fast, I'm like, I just can't, man.
That tremolo picking, especially, always gets you.
He's fantastic. There's Greg Howe is a guy that really got me into a type of tapping, guitar tapping that I had never thought of before, and it's really changed my world. Adrian Ballou is super expressive. He uses lots of these really interesting whammy bar techniques to sort of create new sounds that are, you know, beyond what, you know, the notes in between the frets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, he's a fantastic guitar player and singer. Oh, my God, I love him.
Now, what you do, I've heard it called chiptune.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people in the chiptune community seem to not like that. Is chiptune the proper?
No, chiptune is the proper way to call it.
Okay.
What they don't like is when you call it like Nintendo Core or something like that, which is fairly common. There's a band called Horse the Band that used to call themselves Nintendo Core. And once you say something the first time, then, you know.
It sticks.
That's what it is now. I guess a lot of people in the scene were like, there's usually not any vocals. Like, I don't understand where the core part is. Because that's usually a suffix applied to the type of vocals that happen.
Yeah.
But language is wacky. It is whatever is the most effective way of describing it.
Emo stood for emotive hardcore for a while until
A
bunch of whiny people went and stole it. So, so you played an arm cannon.
Yes.
So was that kind of like a five-piece... Were you doing chiptune stuff, basically?
No, so Arm Cannon was the project that happened when I tried to make my other bands play Nintendo music, and then I found some people at college that were also into old Nintendo music, and so we made a band devoted to just covering old Nintendo songs.
Okay.
And we've expanded a bit beyond that now, but the original point of that band was... All right, let's just cover old Nintendo songs and play a bunch of guitar solos.
Sure. Are you guys still active?
Yes. We're probably part-time is the way that I would put it. You know, we're not as active as we used to be, but we still play shows a couple times a year. And we're working on some new stuff, but it's a little bit slow. Everyone's got family, and I've got other projects going on, and so does everyone else. And it's kind of a fun... self-sustaining project that we've been able to have some success with, but you know, it's not the thing that's driving our lives.
At what point did making your Game Boy a synthesizer become a part of kind of your plan for how you were going to create music.
Oh, so that's a total accident, like everything in my life. The way I would put it is I started Arm Cannon to cover Nintendo music because I was really into video game music and I wanted to translate that to the live world, and it was a new, exciting thing. I got involved in these online communities devoted to it and somehow joined an internet band that also did that called Metroid Metal. And we played these big festivals over on like the West Coast and stuff like that. The first time I played with Metroid Metal in Seattle at this festival called Penny Arcade Expo. I happened upon a concert happening in the street. They were Game Boy musicians playing these tracks, and they were using an amplifier hooked up to a car battery, and there was a big dance party with like 100 people happening on a sidewalk in the middle of downtown Seattle, and it was like the most punk rock awesome thing I'd ever seen. I guess for me, two things happened. One, the Game Boy is a bit nastier sounding than the NES, and I spent most of my time studying at the NES. And the other thing was I didn't know people were making new original music with this hardware. And when I was covering music with Arm Cannon or, you know, with that other band, Metroid Metal, I was actually studying the hardware itself in order to best sort of represent these tracks in these recreations. And so I already knew a lot of the technical sort of ins and outs of the sound chips that they were using. And so when I found out that there was these people making new music on Game Boys, and it sounded super cool, and I know a bit about it already, I instantly sort of went down another rabbit hole. It was going to be a dumb little side project, being Danimal Cannon and writing music on Game Boys. I think the idea was I was going to have some looping backing tracks, and I was going to play a bunch of guitar solos.
Sure.
And just for fun, because I thought it'd be fun to do, like, guitar improv and stuff like that. And it turns out that I don't write music like that. When I actually put pen to paper and started writing music on the Game Boy, what came out were these really sort of hot, heavily arranged, intricate sort of tracks that were essentially me being a guitar player in another band, except my bandmate was a Nintendo Game Boy.
Drinks less of your beer than a regular bandmate. So we're going to take a break. We're going to play Axis by Danimal Cannon off of his most recent album, Lunaria.
Lunaria. Yeah.
Close enough.
It is a real word. I made up a fake word and then found out it was a real word.
Well, you're a goddamn genius, Dan.
I don't know if that's how that works.
All right, you're listening to Access here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
So are there copyright issues when using Game Boy music or sounds?
So for using the Game Boy as a synthesizer, absolutely not. It's a sound chip, and it's sort of like if you took a keyboard that also has a sound chip and were just using that in your tracks. That's really not anything you have to worry about. When you're covering video game music, that is something you do have to worry about. So when people first started covering video game music, back when we started doing that in 2003, 2005, it wasn't considered music according to the recording industry. Wow. You had to be sort of released on an album or something like that. Otherwise, legally, it didn't actually make sense for them. It just fell outside of, it felt outside the bounds of like what was considered licensable by at least American companies like the Harry Fox Agency and stuff like that. So people who were trying to get licenses to legally cover this stuff weren't able to get them. It was not a thing. So people just did it anyways. It was sort of like, let's say you've got a crock pot and the crock pot plays a jingle when the food is done and you decide to play the jingle off of that crock pot. It's not considered music by the recording industry unless it had been released on a CD. Years later, probably starting around 2010, 2012, it started to become enough of a thing and independent gaming was sort of emerging and people started to sell their soundtracks in America. At some point, people started to figure out the whole licensing deal and how to deal with companies. And I don't know the ins and outs of it so much, but I know that it took a few years. Now you can go on to certain services and actually, you know, license your music correctly. And it's hard because a lot of times as a band, you want to do like a medley of like a bunch of songs from a game. And that becomes a nightmare to license because you're like, oh, well, these count as, you know, different songs. And now you're licensing like four different songs in one track. So for me, it made so much more sense to really just focus on original music financially and because that's where my interests were kind of pushing towards anyways. I had been covering music for a long time and it's sort of like, all right, well, now let's see what you can do kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know. I talked to Bit Brigade about it and,
yeah,
when I saw you and they were telling, because they have a disc and it's them playing Contra while they play Contra. And I'm
right,
like, guys, how do you get the licensing for this? And they said, Nintendo won't even talk to us.
Yeah.
So we just do it. And there actually isn't any copyright stuff on their album. And it actually is, it's not out of the ordinary in copyright law where if you reach out to someone and offer to pay them to use their work and they don't respond to you, just having that effort makes it easier if for later mitigation, if someone sues you, you can say, well, I tried to reach them. And that actually does,
right,
can make it easier. Yeah.
And most of those larger companies, probably like a small indie, they would just send you like a cease and desist. Like they're not going to go out,
right,
and,
yeah,
sue.
I think anyone outside of Nintendo would probably be at least a little more receptive to it. I know Nintendo is really careful about their what they own.
There's a very big difference in the cultures,
yeah,
and how that stuff works. I do know, so like in Nintendo Power, like Bit Brigade has been, it's really hard to say their name, Bit Brigade has been featured, so is the mini bosses, like in,
cool,
Nintendo Power's magazine.
Yeah.
Or Nintendo Power, the magazine. You know, that's a subtle endorsement officially.
They know about Bit Brigade,
right,
so they could do something if they wanted.
Right. And the other thing is there doesn't seem to be an even standard being held. Like, there's plenty of people using video game art and, like, making products. Like, they're slapping them on a shirt or,
yeah,
they're putting them or fan art and, like, DeviantArt and stuff like that. They can CND all that stuff if they wanted to. What they do choose to put their foot down on pretty consistently, if you make a fan game.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of instances. If you make, like, a remake of somebody was working on a Chrono Trigger remake, that got shut down. Somebody who remade Metroid 2, that got shut down.
Even, like, Flappy Bird, same way, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of. Although Flappy Bird, I think they got away with. I don't know exactly.
That got pulled.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, that got pulled off. Anyone, I remember right after it did, people were selling iPhones with Flappy Bird for, like, extra amounts of money because you couldn't download it anymore.
No, Flappy Bird's a weird, awesome, well, it's not awesome, but a strange story. So it's like a guy in Thailand, I think,
mm-hmm,
and he made Flappy Bird, and then it got huge for no reason.
I don't get it. That.
And he took it off because there was some interview where, like, he said that people were angry at the game because it was hard and brought them a lot of stress. And don't quote me on this, but it's something like he didn't want to bring, like, displeasure to the world or, like, more pain. And so he removed it. Feel free to go look that up and add, like, a weird addendum.
We should not tell him that Dark Souls exists. Yeah, I think he's going to just jump off a bridge.
It was one of those really strange sort of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've
played through Dark Souls, and I would say Flappy Bird is harder.
I haven't played either for any great length of time, so I'll take your word on that.
So I do have one story
involving,
like, odd rights issues and things like that. So when I went to Japan the first time to play at this chiptune festival called Square Sounds in Tokyo, I had a friend who knew the composer of Daytona USA, and I don't know if you know that theme song for Daytona USA. It's the most ridiculous, beautiful song you've ever heard. It's going, Daytona, let's go away. Anyways.
I don't remember that. I wish I did.
Please listen to it.
Yeah.
I was able to reach out to the singer and composer of that song and asked him if he wanted to play it live with me. Sega told me, or at least told my friend that was communicating for me, that they could do it, but nobody could record it or broadcast it over the internet in order to sort of protect their intellectual property. And in Japan, there's a lot more of that.
So this podcast covers the struggles of local independent musicians.
Right, right. I've kind of expanded the scope a little bit.
That's great. Are there any... are there any, like, kind of weird struggles that you've had that you think are unique to the kind of music you make?
Well, I don't fit into any bill ever.
Sure.
Or when I do, it's kind of a rare thing. I have to, if I want to play shows regularly, it's hard to say words sometimes. I have to fit in with bands that aren't exactly what I do, which is a weakness and a strength.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you stand out, and people who, if they're in the right mindset, they're like, oh, wow, this is something new and different that I haven't heard before. I have had certain occasions where I'm on a bill and it just isn't a good fit for one reason or another, or the vibe isn't right. It can be hard sometimes.
Sure.
I do think it is more of a positive than a negative. There are some local people around town who are making chiptune music now. And there is the collective in Buffalo called Buffalo Game Space, which is independent game developers who I work alongside and hang out with. And they do events that, you know, I've had a little bit more of a nice home in Buffalo. But for several years, you know, it was me and one other person. And we, you know, maybe did one show together a year.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I mostly played out of town, actually, because I did better there. And I was able to find the audience a little bit easier.
Sure.
It can be weird putting yourself out there on a ledge by yourself. Being in a band, if I have a show that goes terrible, we just kind of joke with each other.
And, yeah.
You know, like, screw this gig. And, you know, drink some beer and laugh it off. But when you're by yourself as a solo artist and you play this gig where you don't fit in at all and it doesn't go well, oh, man. It's like, I was surprised at how much it affected me emotionally. And I've had luck in more recent years in Buffalo, but the first couple years was pretty tough. I would do better out of town, and then I'd come back home and be a local kid and, you know, have to start over from scratch. And it was kind of funny because I started getting bigger because I'd go play these conventions and things like that, and I'd have fans who would be like, oh, you're from Buffalo? And, like, so I'd have fans who, like, knew me from shows out of town, and then they would be coming to my shows in Buffalo. It was really kind of a backwards way to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not the best at promoting myself. My strength, like, lies in music. And, you know, I'm not the best at that sort of thing. And locally, you have to sort of really be a strong personality to be effective at promoting. So I just didn't really play around town very much for a long time. But now I'm doing it a little bit more, and people know who I am now, so... still don't have bills that fit in very well, but that's all right.
I think from what I've seen, like, metal bills seem to... seem metal, prog, like... But I feel like, honestly, like, after I saw you, I just... my first thought is, like, I want to book this guy with any bill I can. Because I think people will get into kind of, like... You're an amazing guitar player. People, I think, can hopefully... at the right shows, people are there for music, I think they can get into, like, great musicianship, like, regardless of the genre.
Right.
I hope so. I think there's a lot more places where hopefully you can dig in a bit.
But. Right. I had a good relationship with After Dark
for
a while. And for a while, they were putting me on all the shows that, like, we don't know what fits with this.
Sure.
Which was good. It was actually a really nice thing. I met some great musicians. I played with someone named That One Guy.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's amazing.
He will be in town February 16th, okay. Actually.
I played a show with this band called Galactic Empire that does Star Wars covers. There's a couple other, you know, random shows. Since The Waiting Room, so for a while I was pretty much just doing opening gigs for some of the weirder acts that were in town, and I actually liked that. I was down with that. But
at what point in everything you're doing did you start? Like, how do you get your music into video games? Like, what is your... Is it through Buffalo Gaming Space, or is it through... Like, how'd you do that?
So, going back to those years when I was a big internet nerd, and I still am, and I was hanging out in these communities devoted to video game music, on the... It was web forums and some other sites like that, and I would be covering this video game music, posting it online, you know, chatting with my friends, learning about video game hardware. The people who became my fans on the internet, they're the same people that grew up to be the independent game developers.
Ah.
Yeah, and it was only because I was kind of hanging with the right crowd. Because who are the, you know, the people who were obsessed with video games but they became computer programmers, they were listening to, you know, video game, you know, covers and remakes and stuff like that on the internet. They were the dorks who were hanging out on those websites too. It's one of those things that I just fell ass backwards into, like, oh, how do you get into the game industry? Oh, just spend a decade being a nerd in the right places on the internet. Because I had been studying game audio, I was also studying things like sound effects and things like that. Sure. And also the implementation, like, oh, these tracks only last for a minute or something like that, or these ones are a menu music sounds like. This is what a overworld piece of music sounds like.
Sure.
This is what boss music sounds like.
And we all know what boss music sounds like.
Right, we all know what it is. But, yeah, you know it when you hear it.
Oh, yeah.
Just like pornography in the courts.
Yeah, perfect, yeah.
Anyways, yeah, so I had been studying for this test that I didn't know I'd have to take for, like, a decade. And so when someone's like, oh, yeah, we need some menu music. And I was like, I know exactly what menu music is supposed to sound like.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so it was a skill set that I was particularly adept for. And a lot of the projects I get, they want that retro audio sound. I do a lot more than that. I like, you know, I was, part of my job was to make retro sounding music not sound like retro music.
Sure.
For a long time when I was covering music. So I have both of those skill sets in my wheelhouse, but a lot of people like the classic sound, especially if they're using like old pixel art and they want that. I have the ability to sort of make that really authentically, and I often get projects that want me to do sort of chiptune 8-bit kind of stuff, and there's a big market for that.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break.
All right.
All right. We will be back with Danimal Cannon here on the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
This is Dan McCormick from Kill the Clock, and you're listening to allwny.com.
All right. Lots of cool stuff coming to Buffalo in the next couple weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Prove it.
Prove it, Ryan Gurnett.
Oh, you're so white. On February 22nd at Mohawk Place, DJ Miyosi, who I am not familiar with, is playing with The Eaves and Dead Wolf. I always like talking about how much I love The Eaves. Their new album is great. They're good live, too. Dead Wolf is another great band. I haven't checked them out live, but they kind of have they remind me of Foster the People.
Okay.
So they've got that kind of throwback kind of sound. Throwback but still modern kind of sound. So check them out on the 22nd. On the 23rd, I'm throwing a fun show at Milky's featuring our guest Danimal Cannon.
Oh, yeah. Which
actually worked out real nice. So the battle rap that I had planned fell through because we had lots of cancellations. So I just kind of put this together. We've got Danimal playing. We have Friends of the Podcast, Cardboard Homestead playing. Jordan Potter, who is a great solo artist with a nice voice. I think we've played a couple of his songs on here. We have the Finality Complex featuring Paul Burt. I have not seen them. I've heard they're always an interesting kind of different kind of a show. A local rapper called KB is going to be doing about 15 minutes. I don't listen to a lot of local hip-hop, but finding a local female rapper is just like... She's the first one I've really seen. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's got cool flow. She can, you know, she can go real fast if she has to, but she can also go fast if the music's slow. And that's kind of a... That's a special skill when you're doing hip-hop. Not everyone can do that. And then DJ Soyotos will be finishing up the night there. So that's going to be at Milky's February 23rd. It's going to start at 9, and it is $5 and 21 plus to get in.
All right.
And then finally, Buffalo wouldn't be Buffalo without Burt Fest. An annual... Is it his birthday?
It's his birthday.
Oh, that's good.
Oh yeah, we actually I'm gonna make a t-shirt that says that. So it's at Ironworks. It's on February 24th. As only Greg Burt can. It is so many bands. Overlook is on there. Previous Love, who we played on a recent episode, they're gonna be there. Creating a Skinner, Scathed, Among the Wolves, featuring our buddy Chandler on drums. From the Branches of Tide, Lost Like Lions, Beaches of Europa, Amateur Hockey Club, John Harris Music and the Otherworld Entities, Dilettante, Filmhouse, Cheap Peach, Max Dolden, Insoluble, The Who, The Rolling Stones, Green Day, Limp Bizkit. Well, okay. Not everyone, I guess.
Okay.
But yeah, so a lot of bands, if you want to just... I mean, I'm not actually familiar with a lot of these bands. If you want to just go and check out a huge clump of bands, like, this seems like a great opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Burt Fest is a lot of fun because it's, like, all bands that are solid. It's not like they ever have, like, duds on there. But they're also not, you know, the biggest bands in Buffalo either.
Yeah.
It's a good, like, up-and-comers kind of.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And next up we have Heavy Heart by Dead Wolf. Here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
To sing.
So, for this game of Real Not Real, I have 8 music-related video game facts. And you guys have to tell me if they're real or not. Who wants to go first?
I know nothing about video games, so this will be good.
Oh. How good's your history of video games, Nate?
Six out of ten.
Okay. I do want to level the playing field.
Okay. It's okay.
Parappa the Rappa is a rhythm game released on the PlayStation in 1996. The first version of the game that hit stores contained a song with multiple drug references that had to be taken out of successive versions of the game.
I've never heard of that game. I'm not even sure that game exists. So I'm going to say not real.
It is not real. The game does exist. It's actually... some people consider it a PlayStation classic. I don't. But there were no drug references in it.
I never had a PlayStation growing up.
Ah.
I stopped at it and Super NES.
I had a PlayStation. I did not care to own Parappa the Rappa, which I believe is now available on PS4 if you want to play it. All right. Nate.
All right.
Nintendo dabbled with music long before it started making video games.
Okay.
The Ella Conga, released in 1970, was an electric bongo drum with buttons that could be pressed to make drum noises. Players could then plug it into a separate add-on called the Auto Player that would play cardboard discs, and prearranged drum beats would come out of the Ella Conga. 33 years later, Nintendo released Donkey Konga on GameCube.
That's so specific. But you're also getting pretty good at making up fake stuff. Not real.
That is real.
Oh. Come on.
I was surprised by that one, too. That is something I'd never heard of before.
Donkey Konga.
Donkey Konga is real.
I remember Donkey Konga. Yes. I thought...
The first part was...
Yeah, that's what I thought the kernel of truth was. And then I thought you made up a backstory for Donkey Konga.
Oh, I should start making up fake origin stories for video games. All right, Will. Make My Video was a series of launch titles for the Sega Mega CD. It includes games spotlighting Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and Criss Cross.
I'm going to say that's real.
You are correct.
That one I actually do know.
Some facts. Game Informer gave Marky Mark a 0 out of 10, which is the lowest score possible. A 2006 PC World article rated the game number 8 on the list of worst games ever. And WatchMojo.com ranked it as the worst launch title of all time. Uh-huh. The Criss Cross title is on Sean Baby's Crapstravaganza list of the 20 worst games of all time at number 18.
And we all know that Mark Wahlberg did nothing after that. Totally destroyed his career.
I kind of want to just buy this game and see what it's about now. Yeah. Like,
whatever happened to him anyway?
Yeah. No one knows what happened to him.
No.
All right, Nate.
All right.
There's a 2005 role-playing game called Victor Vran that has Motorhead-themed downloadable content. Called Motorhead Through the Ages, the expansion allows you to use typical RPG weapons like swords and bows, but also lets you equip a guitar to destroy zombies with your rocking.
Real.
Yes.
Okay.
It is real. I played it, and it's actually a pretty fun game, but... Nothing explained to me that I was getting a guitar. Mm-hmm. So, like, literally, you got, like, this... It's, like, steampunky almost. Like, bows and, like, guns and stuff. And they're like, here's your guitar. Start shredding. What is happening right now? All right. Will, Sony and Nintendo entered into a developmental partnership to create a new console. It was going to be the first video game to play CDs. Sony would provide the electronics, the CD player, and all the other parts... But Nintendo killed the project. Sony continued to do this, and that's where the PlayStation came from.
That is real.
That is real.
I read the book about the guy. Boy, I can't remember the name of it is now, but he actually... I want to say it was called Console Wars, is the name of the book.
All right. You're saying you don't have any video game history?
Yeah, here's my video game history. I read Console Wars, and I watched Angry Video Game Nerd.
Okay, well,
Angry Video Game Nerd is fun.
I've read zero video game books, so that already puts you quite a bit
ahead. Guys, I don't know anything. All right. I'm looking out here.
Nate.
All right.
The Ramones pitched Nintendo Rock and Roll High School Forever, a video game that would serve as a sequel to their 1979 movie Rock and Roll High School. but the game did not meet Nintendo's strict content guidelines.
Not real.
That's not real. Okay. I would play that game, though. And I did find out that there is a sequel to Rock and Roll High School called Rock and Roll High School Forever, starring Corey Feldman.
Nice.
I had no idea this existed. I kind of think I need to hate
Have you heard of any of Corey Feldman's music? Angelic to the Core?
Oh, I saw that performance he did on, like, the Good Morning America. Listeners, feel free to watch that if you haven't. And it will, like... If I needed a video example of hot mess, Corey Feldman performing
that whole record, it's a 90-minute double album, and it's like one of the most beautiful messes of all time. It's like it's definitely in like the category of so bad it's good.
If you listen to the whole
like
album,
The Room, not at once. It was too much to.
Once I love that,
but I have made my way through it. Yeah.
Does he dress like Donatello from the Ninja Turtles when he does it?
And what I saw, he was wearing like a black cape. He almost kind of looked like a vampire.
Yeah, it's very like...
Because he was always for Donatello, right? In the 1990 live action movie?
No, was he Michelangelo, I thought?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, but yeah, he was one of
them. Let's not act like the Ninja Turtles have a distinct personality.
Yeah.
They have colors.
Will, according to Fagolovers.net... The Insane Clown Posse released a mobile game called ICP The Gathering, where you are tasked with building the best gathering of the Juggalos.
I hope that's not true. I'm going to say not real.
It is so fucking real.
Yeah, the Fago thing.
It's like it's like a roller coaster tycoon game, but you make the biggest gathering.
Aren't they sponsored by, like, aren't they sponsored by
Fago? Yeah. They use it to spray down.
Right. See that? I should have... it's too bad. All right, good for them.
I thought including Fagolovers.net, which does exist, was gonna throw you off.
Good for them.
All right. This is the tie.
Okay.
Nate.
What happens if we tie?
You two give each other a hearty handshake.
Okay.
I do have, like, I have got this big box of really fucking stupid prizes to give you guys for these games, but it's always at my place and not wherever we are recording. But someday... someone's gonna win
some awesome.
Awful, awful things.
Can't wait.
All right, Nate. For the 2016 release of Doom, it was discovered that playing the game's audio through a spectrogram, which is a device used to visualize sound frequencies, apparently revealed numerous demonic symbols, including a pentagram and the numbers 666.
That seems like an intentional Easter egg. That'd be kind of cool. I'm gonna say real.
Correct.
Yeah, very cool. Good job, sound designer, whoever did that.
So yeah. A tie. Aww.
We're there shaking
you go.
Hands.
The hearty handshake that no one can see. So we'll be right back with more of the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
It's time to stop! No more!
And that is all we have for part one of our interview with Danimal Cannon. Join us next time for the second part of our interview with Danimal Cannon. We're going to play another game of Real Not Real with bands that had video games made for them. And as usual, we'll be covering previous and upcoming concerts.
You can find Danimal Cannon on all online music platforms. And be sure to check him out on February 23rd at Milky's. Check out AllWNY at allwny.com. or by downloading the AllWNY app, available on Android and iOS. There you can find the local music stream and the family of AllWNY podcasts, including The Skeleton Closet with Carl Winslow, Corey Commons, The Nick and Dan Show, The Think So Joe podcast,
hosted by Karina DeFabio, and a steaming pile of roast beef.
And our personal favorite podcast, The Big Picture with Michael Sargent, where you can learn about framing your photography and how Antifa is running http://www.twitter.com.
You can just Google search Twitter if you really need to. You can find us on Facebook at The Struggle is Real Podcast. We are on Twitter at SIR Podcast NY. You can reach out to me at Twitter at Sir William Idle. Please give us feedback. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. And if you want to do us a favor, listen to us and then download us. because that counts as two. Folks, being a musician is chaos. Please be kind to each other. See you next time and keep struggling.